Welcome to another episode of Heavily Pixelated, mon amis. Today's episode, we travel to MIGS, the Montreal International Game Summit in Montreal, Quebec. And I try to speak French and fail. Je ne parle pas français très bien. When I went to Montreal, I also was looking forward to just being in Montreal again. I love Montreal. I have lots of fond memories of Montreal. When I was a kid, of course, I grew up in the woods, literally no streetlights. I think our road was a dirt road. So I had a pretty rural and isolated existence. My parents, when they first got married, long before I was born, they went on their honeymoon to the Pocono Mountains, and while they were staying in the resort in the Poconos, they became friendly with a French-Canadian couple named Jacques, and Lisette. And eventually, the two of them divorced, and Lisette would be a lifelong family friend. And we would visit her. My mom would talk to her on the phone pretty regularly, and we would visit her maybe once a year, once every couple years. And I remember one time in particular when we drove up to Montreal, and we saw the apartment where she lived, and the idea of living in an apartment just seemed incredible to me. I couldn't believe that people were stacked up on top of each other. And I also just loved being in Montreal. I loved the exotic sodas, the pops that you could get in Montreal. I remember my brother and I became obsessed with cream soda. It seemed like there were always, you know, confectionery things around, sugary things around, croissants around. Just people spoke this language that I didn't understand. And I think even as a kid, it was really the first city that I ever fell in love with. I remember the morning that we were leaving. It was very cold and bright. We had a long drive ahead of us, and so we went downstairs, we packed up our car, and I remember driving away from the apartment building where Lisette lived. And Lisette had a daughter named Melanie, and the two of them were standing on the balcony outside their apartment. And Lisette had her robe on, and she was holding Melanie in her arms, and she was waving to our car as it drove away. And I just remember just thinking, this is a special moment. And I wasn't sure why it was a special moment. This felt like I was learning something important. I think that was really the beginning of why I've lived in cities my whole life, why I love cities as much as I do. Montreal is the reason. This is my chat with Adam Boyce. Adam's a great guy. I've interviewed him multiple times on EP Daily. I can tell he loves games. I can tell that he knows what he's talking about. I feel like there's just something always genuine about him. I look forward to seeing him, and I look forward to talking to him. And you know, after his stint at Sony, where he served as vice president of publisher and developer relations, he quit. He left Sony, and he took a strange job. He took a job with a company called Iron Galaxy. I guess I wanted to talk to Adam because, you know, I'm kind of looking around for direction myself, and I feel like, you know, when you need direction in your life, I feel like you have to kind of seek out the wise man in your village. And Adam feels like one of the, you know, the wise men in our gamer village. And, you know, he did something very strange. He left that job and he took this job at Iron Galaxy. And I wanted to see Adam, you know, to ask him some questions about life and why he makes the decisions that he's made and why he structured his career the way that he has. But I also wanted to ask him why he left Sony, because that seems nuts to me. I mean, it seems like a pretty great place to be these days. And when I found him in Montreal, it was just after he delivered his keynote address for the day. So you can kind of feel, as you listen to this conversation, the weight had been lifted from his shoulder. And I saw the talk. It was a great talk. Anyway, here's my conversation with Adam.
Let's talk about your plan for today. Like, you gave a talk, and it's a talk that you said you may or may not give again in the future.
I would be open to it, but usually a lot of places want a new one. But because this wasn't televised or streamed, then I'd love to do it again.
How much work is this? Is this like weeks of work?
Yeah.
Were you rehearsing?
I would probably say, no, not rehearsing. It's more about building the structure. Like, I knew what I wanted to do right away when they said, what's the synopsis? I said, Gold Rush, Gaming Gold Rush. Gaming Gold Rush. And then there's like Gaming Golden Age, Gaming Gold. There's gold. And then there's, and then I was like, I don't have any of my family history, or I had lost it. I didn't know it. So I had to do a bunch of research. I luckily found a bunch of posts from Ancestry.com that our family had made years and years and years ago to tell the history. Mm-hmm. So I was able to tap on all that and then think about, what did they go through? I originally thought they went to the Klondike Gold Rush. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, and so I did all the research on that, watched all the videos. I probably spent, 50 to 80 hours building the deck and the story and stuff like that. But I feel like when you do that, then you know it so deeply that you don't, like, I had notes. And when I got here, they were like, we can't show you your notes. I was like, all right.
Oh, so you did it without any notes?
No.
So how did you keep track of them?
They have sort of a feed in front of you, an electronic feed, the way a newscaster has a feed when he or she is doing the news. You have that usually, but Adam didn't have that when he gave his talk in Montreal.
I thought for sure you had a feed.
No.
Nothing. Oh my God, that's amazing.
No, that's only for E3. E3 is the only place where I'd read off of a script. That one was winged. That's why I was making all the bad jokes about him getting a phone call. I'm like, wait, there was no phone call. Like, correcting myself, that's sort of how I do it.
That's
like,
my
it's
laugh, like, and external yes, voice is always I on. Hate
so
it.
You had a script, it was all in your head,
yeah.
But I also felt like there was an improvisational quality to it as you were going through it.
Well, just adding different things and anecdotes and thinking about things and looking at people in the room and reading what they're responding to and sort of pivoting or adding more, like adding different stories here and there that I didn't necessarily like. I just did my rehearsal. I very rarely do rehearsals. This is probably like, I did one for, what's another talk I gave?
Well, so many you rehearsed, I'm sure.
Yeah, for those. But that's easier because when there's a script in front of you, whatever, you don't need to rehearse that much. And I hated doing it more than once.
Still, those were huge crowds.
There was a lot. That's the thing. And yet I was more nervous to do this than I was at E3.
Really?
Yeah.
You always look so calm.
No, I know. That's because I think about who's in the audience and these are my people and this is my country.
They really are. Like, everybody there is rooting for you.
Yeah, no, that's what I realized before I ever went on stage in E3. It's like, when you realize that everyone's in your corner, you're like, I can't fuck up. I mean, even if I screw up and I embrace it, what's the worst that can happen?
Right.
You boot off stage.
Right.
Because these are my people. And I also thought oftentimes about, like, what does it mean to me when I was looking up to these people that were on stages? And holy shit, this is such an honor and a privilege. Like, there's a lot of pressure, but at the same time, if I'm me, then it's... I'm one of you, we're all one of these together. Whereas I feel like a lot of times they put corporate douches up on stage and you're like, I'm not connecting to you. You know, you're just talking at me. You're talking about the boat that you were on this weekend had no video game systems in it.
But you know, like, now that you're away from Sony, I can say this. Jack Trenton, I felt that way. I didn't feel like, I didn't think he was an evil guy, but I feel like he wasn't me. He wasn't one of us.
Yeah. You know? Now, he was a phenomenal fucking salesman. Like, I loved, every time he talked, I listened. He just, like I always said, like, when you look up boss in the dictionary, it's just a picture of Jack Trent and the furrowed brow.
Yeah.
But you're right. He wasn't, and he never tried to be. He never pretended. That's what I appreciate about him, too. I feel like nowadays people feel like they have to over-exaggerate what they play or how they play it. Now, when you look at Phil Spencer, though, he's legit a gamer. Like, he's a real dude from the core. Like, he loves playing the shit, too.
I feel like he's a bro, man.
Yeah, totally,
he's
totally.
He's a bro gamer. Like, let's get together and game on Friday, man.
Absolutely. And so I think people like that, I think, are easier to relate to.
Yeah.
And people that aren't that way, just, you know, it's a different role that you play on stage. And that's why I think it's a lot more challenging for companies like Amazon, Apple, and Google to talk authentically about the gaming industry. Because they're usually putting on somebody that is the most powerful person in that vertical,
right?
Who probably has 6 MBAs and was a professor for 9 years, and but is not me. I can't relate, and that's why one of the things that they let me do there at PlayStation was to add my own words. Like, I remember when I was talking about when I introduced Black Flag on stage. I was able to say like skullduggery and tomfoolery and chicanery, and I was like, that's my shit, these are my words. And that was what made me feel planted, because I was able to sort of talk with my own voice.
And I told you I had coffee with Doug Trongsgaard.
One of the interesting things in Adam's talk was that he confessed to having figured out what CEOs of video game companies' email addresses were. You take the first name, put a dot after it, then you put the last name, and then you do at the name of the company.com. He just took a shot in the dark when he was a kid, and of the 10 CEOs he sent emails to, he heard from 6 of them, and he got a job offer from one of them. And that's kind of an amazing thing to realize, how accessible everyone is if you just kind of put your mind to it and take a shot. Anyway, back to the conversation.
I was like, you didn't fucking have to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm just a guy making $10 an hour. And he believed in me, and he was like, he hired me at the start, and I was like, yeah, as long as we keep in touch.
But you have something, though, like, and you expressed it in your talk you just gave, and that what you have that a lot of people don't have is you find out who the 10 heads of studio were in Vancouver. Yeah. You figured out what their email addresses were through trial and error. You tried that. Like, that is amazing. There are so many people out there who think, oh, if I could just talk to so-and-so, if I could just get a chance.
Chances are they want to talk to you.
Chances are they, and I can't believe that, like, 6 of them wanted to have coffee with you, and then one of them offered you a job.
Yeah. And then the worst part is when I got the job, Scott, everyone in the engineering team thought that it was a game, that I'd scammed my way in by doing that whole email thing. Like, they were like, that's the best way. They would tell stories within the company about how Adam got the job, thinking that I was, like, premeditated. I'm like, I'm not that smart.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fucking... He just said that to me, and I walked back, and I was like,
gutsy,
I'd just gotten passed up for promotion.
Yeah.
Me and another guy that was on my team in QA got passed over for an assistant producer promotion. I had this guy, Tom Singleton, great guy, but he was a guy that played basketball with the team every week. Mm-hmm. And so they felt an affinity to bring him on. So I felt, like, deflated. And I'd realized that, you know, you talked about being shitty. I was not a great employee back then. Mm-hmm. I was fucking over the top and... Oh, I got to do this. Let's do a food challenge. Just have a lot of fun. Like, too much. And I meet a lot of these young people now that I'm like, just, God, you'd be so good one day when you're seasoned. Just a little bit understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what that helped me realize that I had hit my glass ceiling at EA, and I would not make it into production if I stayed. It would have taken me another 4 to 6 years because my reputation was a bombastic asshole. Not asshole, but just like a goof, right? Like class clown company. So when I went to that other company, when he offered me that job, I was like, I don't want to leave. And I'm like, wait a minute, I should leave. I didn't want to leave games, but it was like, I was young, I was whatever, 24, 25. And I don't look back, because then after that, I got a job in Ireland, and I moved to Dublin at another dot-com startup, which again was just like, that company was crashing. Mm-hmm. So one of the guys was a tech writer, he's in his 60s. He's like, let me tell you about Ireland. And I was like, tell me more stories. And I knew my family's history sort of like went back there.
Yeah.
So I applied to irishjobs.ie, got an interview within a week, phone interview, they offered me a job. And I was like, what? And I FedExed my passport to the Irish consulate. I had it back in 2 days with the stamps and you're working.
That's amazing.
I moved to Dublin when I was 26.
I think that's important because, you know, you're Canadian.
Yeah.
But you just also have to remember, like, the world is big. There's lots of different countries. And I think sometimes you have to go work in a far-flung country. Ireland.
Ireland is, like, light. Far-flung country light. Because it's, like, even though it's a melting pot of a bunch of people, it's still everyone speaks English.
Yeah.
I feel like almost working in Montreal could be harder than working.
That's true.
But it is. I had the privilege growing up of doing a lot of international travel. Like, when I was 12, we went to Sweden for my brother's hockey team. We had raised some money, and the hockey team went there.
How many brothers?
And then I have one brother and one sister, both younger. I'm the oldest. And then I was able to go to Australia when I was 16, and I just fell in love with seeing things from different perspectives. And so I told my wife when we first got married, I said, okay, when we have kids, when they turn 10, we're doing 1 month every 2 years. We're going to take them to new countries. And we're going to help them see the world like we, because she lived in England for a year. I want them to be so well equipped, like, not only being a great parent and being and have a great school, but like that summer, 1 month.
This is a lovely conversation to hear about Adam's plans for his family and for his future, but I have one burning question that I cannot wait to ask Adam.
Okay,
that
is, why on earth did this man leave Sony? I think that just teaches you something. I feel like if anything I can do with your
shoes. You know, everybody thought you were crazy leaving Sony. You went to Chicago.
Yeah.
And you have history in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you worked at Midway in Chicago.
2003 to 07, yeah.
And you're at Iron Galaxy now. Yeah. Like, what's your mission? What are you prospecting for at Iron Galaxy?
A lot of stuff. Right now, we've been sort of historically doing a lot of work for hire stuff, but also own IPs. Like, we took over Killer Instinct from when Double Helix got bought by Amazon. Mm-hmm. Iron Galaxy got Killer Instinct. So we've been basically working on that for 3 or 4 years. So that's a big, big thing in the company. Obviously, there's a lot of fighting game heritage in the company with Street Fighter Third Strike and stuff. So that's a big part of it. We're basically working right now on 13 different projects across the company. And a lot of it, some in mobile, mostly in console, some in PC.
But why Chicago, though? Why Iron Galaxy? What is your connection? And what can you tell me and what do you think?
Yeah, no. There's I got a lot of interest when I was like, hey, I'm thinking that I might want to go and make games again. I got a lot of studios that were like, holy shit, let's talk. And I was super humbled by a lot of the sort of discussions I had. But when I thought about what I want to do next, I wasn't interested in going into a super well-established studio that's already doing great things and then continually trying to not disappoint people, because I feel like once you're already achieved, it's like if you could pick any baseball team to manage, picking the Yankees is kind of like, I mean, it's awesome, but what do I get out of it personally? Like, what is the story behind it? So
you go manage the Cubs.
Yeah, well, a year ago, it would have been a good story. Now they just won. So when I looked at all the opportunities and I thought about it, I was like, wow, Dave and I go way back. We went through the trenches, Dave Lang, who founded Iron Galaxy. He was my tech director at Midway. So we joined within 2 weeks of each other. We were both new to Midway. He was originally from Chicago, but lived in Utah for a bunch. So we joined at the same time. We were on Slugfest Loaded, which nobody gave a shit about. internally, and comparatively to Mortal Kombat and everything else. And morale was low, and we were just told to ship it.
I remember.
Or else you guys are going to get fired.
That time in Midway, like Natalie DeRosa.
It's crazy. Remember? Yes, yeah. Natalie Salzman at the time, right? And then DeRosa and Tim DeRosa and Tim Granich and Riley Brennan. I mean, all those. Yeah, it was crazy. Mona Hamilton and Ed Boone, Mark Tremell, Sal DeVita, all
such
that crew.
A weird, small little office too. They flew me
it
out.
It was the most awful office ever. Yeah. It was disgusting. So Dave and I met each other, went to hell and back on that project, and then went on to do Blitz the League, which became like the second most profitable IP in Midway's history. And that was amazing because we were able to succeed together with the team as well, and you know, paid well in bonuses and paid for wedding and all that, you know, stuff like that. So when I left to go to Capcom to run product development, that was obviously an amazing opportunity, so I couldn't pass that up. Because I was only managing one project.
You know, if there are any game developers listening, everyone has to work on a crappy project every now and then. But is there anything worse than working on Slugfest Loaded or Blitz the League? That's what Adam worked on at the start of his career, and he turned out okay. So maybe there's hope for you. All right, let's go back to the conversation.
It was amazing. But why I went to Iron Galaxy is because they've done incredible things. They got 120 people. A lot of super strong tech people, a lot of strong art design people. And think about what kind of studio can we take to achieve a Bungie or Riot or Gearbox? Like, how do you get into that echelon? They had all the ingredients. Like, all the tools are there. Everything's there. It's literally right there. So all we need to do now is, like, put it together. We're going to be working on some of our own IP stuff. And then get into that next level. Because the work for our stuff's great, and we'll continue with that. But we work with a ton of partners around the industry. Had a lot of fun doing that. But to me, the next frontier is our own stuff and sort of owning our own destiny.
When you, like, I totally understand what you're talking about now, because it makes sense that you would go, you're like, you need a work in progress, and you want to leave your fingerprints on it.
Totally.
Know? And so in that sense, as abstract as I put that, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and like, I don't want to, like, people, like, every publisher was like, oh, come work. I'm like, why? Like, it'd be fun, but I kind of need
something chunkier.
I need something chunkier. Yeah, but again, all these studios are super. And the other thing is that joining a studio is one of the hardest things on the planet if you don't have a history. Like, luckily, at Iron Galaxy, Dave has like 10 or 12 people that were on our dev team for Blitz. And so when the announcement internally, the guys were just like, oh shit, yeah, it's on. Right? There's not like, well, I don't know about this new guy. He seems like a douche, right? Yeah. And so we don't, we skip that. Dave and I have been to hell and back. And then when he was starting his company, I was hiring him for a bunch of things when I was at Capcom. And so I trust his work ethic and I knew he was hiring the right people. And so you don't have to go through that honeymoon phase. It's just right away into it. And then Chelsea, who is our chief product officer, she's amazing. So I'd say that like the biggest investment out the gate was just getting to know her and her style and stuff like that. But Dave and I were just like, okay, let's do the grunts and we'll do that.
You must still have some days where you're like, ugh, I wish I just worked at Sony again.
It's that the job at the end, Scott, it was easier. It's easier than when it started. When it started, it was like PS4 wasn't launched. A lot of people didn't like dealing with PlayStation. And so every time you had a new thing that you cracked or a new process that you rolled out or a new thing that impacted developers, you just get little pieces of excitement. So there's so many breadcrumbs along the way.
Yeah.
Whereas development, I think, is a lot more thankless because until the game's out, it's just words, right? And so you got to think about when you start making that thing to when it launches, that 18 months, 2, 3, 4 years, whatever that takes, you're just like, and you don't want to talk too much about it because you get the, you know, the hype effect, which can come crashing down on you super hard, and has.
What happened?
We've seen many victims in the press these days,
where
they're just sitting there licking their wounds, and so it's a balance. But the work in progress thing is important.
But just my last kind of weird, maybe too broad question is, in the time that you've been in the industry, you've made a lot of moves. You've been in a lot of different roles.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of things. We got VR now. Everybody's horny for VR. You know, but
gold rush.
But it's another gold rush, right? Everyone's trying to prospect here. Who knows if there's gold there or not?
Yeah.
But I guess what's the most dramatic, most interesting change that you've seen in the span of your career that comes to mind immediately? Like, games have changed quite a bit.
Yeah. I think as far as experiential, I think VR and AR are it. I think those are the biggest step change. But the problem is the proliferation, right? How do you get ubiquitous access to that content is the biggest challenge that we're going to face. So, like, it's amazing, like, going to Disneyland is amazing, right? In that day or two that you're there, like, that was so great, and you think fondly about it. But if I live beside Disneyland, I'm not going to go every day, right? So how do we make VR a deeper part of the world, I think, is the biggest challenge. But to your point about sort of like doing a bunch of different things, I just am eternally a curious kind of person. And this PlayStation job was the longest job I've ever had in my career. It was 4 years and 6 months. And I remember going for lunch on my 4th year anniversary with my boss. I said, I got good news and I got bad news. He's like, what's good news? I'm like, it's the longest I've ever been in a company. It's bad news. It's the longest I've ever been in the company. Because that my, you know, I start to just think about what else is out there. And we did incredible stuff. But staying curious and with all these, I think, new pieces of technology, like even the start of my talk, like the shit that's happening is bonkers. Like in my lifetime, my house will be sustainable on the sun, from the sun only.
Yep.
And people will be on the Mars. Like that shit is just bananas. So, grabbing those dreams and having no limitations, I think, is the biggest lesson for everyone. Like, there's nothing holding you back from anything.
Right.
And it's a meritocracy, and good ideas bubble to the top, and get your shit out there. And now it's so much easier to access anyone and any piece of information. You talk about people, like, not wanting to reach out to people or get in touch with them or ask them stuff. I'm like, just, you gotta do it. And then if they don't, they probably won't respond. But keep trying, and you'll finally get people and do things in your career. I remember one person that really inspired me is this guy named Gary Vaynerchuk. He runs VaynerMedia, this agency. And I read this book called Crush It before I started my first company. And I was just like, holy shit, I gotta do this. And when I left Capcom and started Beefy Media, I can do this. And I was lying. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't even know how to like start an LLC, right? Bumbling around. But on the external, nobody knew that. They were like, you start a company. Yep. Yeah, I remember the night I decided, I was like, I have to create the website, the logo, email address before the morning so I can show everyone that I have this new company. So I created the beef branding with the cow and all that stuff. and sent it out, and everyone was like, wow, you've been thinking about this for a long time. I'm like, nope. Just came up with the idea this night.
That was it.
Beef, steak, strength. Yeah, so following dreams and find out what your goal is.
Of course, we talked about Chicago and what it was like being there for the Cubs World Series win.
It must have been crazy to be there. I don't know if you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, but I actually last night I was wearing a shirt, and today I was arguing. I talked to Gio. I said, "Should I wear my Cubs jersey on stage or more of my business?" He's like, "They paid for your flight. You should wear business."
And there it is. But there's that laugh again. Damn it!
Yeah,
no,
yeah, come on, man.
One of the most interesting aspects of our conversation was the idea of metaphorically planting seeds, making connections with people now, today, but then having those seeds sprout and become something, business opportunities further along down the line.
I was describing it to my girlfriend. I'm like, I'm just planting seeds everywhere.
Yep, you never know. And then when it does, it's like weird serendipity where you're like, holy shit, it's right. Like No Man's Sky, Sean Murray pitched me Joe Danger when I was at Capcom.
I loved Joe Danger a bunch of times. Yeah.
And that was the reason why we partnered on No Man's Sky, just because of our personal relationship historically. Same with Hellblade with Ninja Theory. Mm-hmm. Nina and Tamim, we hired to do Devil May Cry reboot for us at Capcom. And so I got to know them very closely. So all those relationships. Like, I have a rule that I don't, like, there's no reason to burn bridges. There's only, like, one or two people in the industry that I fucking hate. Everyone else, there's no reason to be shitty to people. I think too many people don't do that. Maybe you learn some lessons about your, not shitty to people, but, you know, you're just sometimes dismissive, or you're just doing shit and getting shit done.
I was hard on games. Yeah. I was really hard on games. I just feel like we don't have a lot of time, and we have to really, I want to protect consumers as much as possible.
Yeah, which,
so I just wouldn't give a game, like, a friendly seven. Here
No, which is fine, but I think that's that conviction. I think
after this, our conversation drifted for a few minutes as we made vague promises to stay in touch and do this again somewhere down the line. I hope that happens. I really like Adam a lot. All the best to Adam in the future, and all the best to Iron Galaxy Studios. Happy holidays, everyone. I know it's the little in-between time between Thanksgiving and Christmas, or whatever it is that you celebrate this time of year. Until next time, I'm Scott C. Jones. Thanks for listening.